This episode is brought to you by Progressive, where drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. Quote now at progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Hello and welcome to This Day in Esoteric Political History from Radiotopia. My name is Jody Avergan. This day, April 9th, 1913, the Constitution gets its 17th Amendment. The amendment was ratified on April 8th, and it signaled a big change for how we get our senators. They were previously appointed by state legislatures. The 17th Amendment made it so that each state's senators would be elected directly by the people of that state. A push towards more direct democracy, but as always, one with some unforeseen ripple effects. To discuss it all, we're joined, as always, by Nicole Hemmer of Columbia. Hello, Nikki.
Hey, Jody.
And our first ever special guest is here. He will be with us for the next few episodes. Jamel Bowie, columnist for the New York Times and serial reviewer for Serial Eats. I think those are the two most important things on your resume, right, Jamel?
Yeah, pretty much. That covers it all.
Okay, good. Everything you need to know. So I was thinking we could spend some time just ranking all the amendments 1 through 27 and seeing, you know, where things... No, we don't have time for that. But I will start there, Jamel. Where does the 17th stand in the consciousness? We could use that old podcast framing of overrated, underrated, or properly rated.
I'd say it's underrated. It's not an amendment very many people think about. I'm sure if you ask people which amendment allowed for direct election of senators, very few would actually have an answer. But it is an amendment that sort of fundamentally transformed the relationship of the Senate to the rest of the federal system. It basically changed the framework that the framers devised in 1787 in a really major way. And so for that reason, it is, I think, a very significant and quite underrated amendment, but with implications that I don't think this political system is fully absorbed at this point.
That framework that you referred to, it's a good point because it's a reminder that in many ways our system was set up not to be a completely direct democracy, but to have these kind of mediating forces and bodies between the people and how government operates. The founders kind of didn't really trust the people. So you have this system set up until this point that puts the power in the hands of state legislatures who then appoint representatives. And those representatives represent states, not necessarily the people in that state, which is an important distinction and has all sorts of implications that we'll get to in a minute. But first, Nikki, anything that you want to say about 1913, the context in which this got ratified and why this change at this time?
So this is a moment where populism has become more important in the United States. It's become a more organized political force, but also muckraking had become this huge political force, this kind of journalism that digs through the most powerful institutions in the United States and exposes the corruption. And this happens with the Senate. Senators were massively corrupt. This should sound familiar for anyone who studies the Senate today. The Senate was massively corrupt. And so a series of articles come out of Cosmopolitan magazine and do a lot to spread this understanding of corruption and organize the opposition to it so that eventually the Senate sort of votes against its own interests and votes for a different form of election for senators there.
This was kind of seen as an anti-corruption effort in that way, but I mean, it creates this system in which now senators have to go out and convince the public that they should be elected, and that invites all sorts of corruption and strange influences as well.
That's right. All of a sudden, senators have to raise money for campaigns, they have to run statewide. They're sort of not just representing the interests of the state as aggregated by its representatives in the state legislature, but directly representing the people of the state, which, to double back on a point I made at the beginning of this, you know, as designed, the Senate was kind of an executive council for the presidency, that the president would rely on the Senate for advice and consent. The Senate would confirm things. And the explicit point was that the Senate would represent the states collectively. But by tying them to the people of the state, then they no longer represent the interests of the state, because the people of the state, right, their allegiances might be influenced by any number of things that have nothing to do with state interests.
Are you just being a good arguer of all sides of this issue, or am I detecting a little bit of skepticism from you about the 17th Amendment?
Oh, no, I'm trying to best render the effects of the 17th Amendment. My own view is that directly electing senators was the right choice, just because state houses aren't nearly as immune to corruption and ill influence as the framers might have imagined. And I think since one of the implications of the amendment is that states no longer have this direct voice in the federal government, I think that should lead us to reflect on other aspects of the system which purport to be about the representation of states, but in the present and for some time really are workarounds for representing the individuals of the country. So that's a long way of saying, I think if you think the 17th Amendment is a good idea, you probably shouldn't think the Electoral College is a good idea. The Electoral College and direct election of senators are in tension with each other.
Nikki, you want to jump in on that? Because I know there have been some rethinking of not just this specific amendment, but in general, it feels like we're living in a moment where people are starting to question some of the basic mechanics of our democracy.
Well, that's right. And the 17th Amendment, if we go back to 1913, was seen as this pro-democracy amendment, right? The people were going to have a say in who their senators were. And democracy comes with all sorts of caveats. And in this case, a really big one, which that the 17th Amendment, like the 19th Amendment, doesn't come around and open up the ballot until Black Southerners have been functionally disenfranchised through Jim Crow laws. But I think over time, as Jim Crow has been knocked down, as the vote has been made more open, the 17th Amendment does represent this voice of the people in the selection of senators. And more recently, people have been thinking, as Jamel was talking about, can we make this a more open system by doing away with the Electoral College so there is more direct democracy? At the same time, there have been people, particularly in conservative and Republican circles, who have said, wait a second, maybe this democracy thing has gotten a little out of hand and we should maybe repeal the 17th Amendment and go back to having the states choose, which would give a big boost to Republicans who until recently controlled quite a few state houses.
Jamel, do you see us at all in an era where certainly the conversation is coming up, but do you see any actual changes to these big things that we've been discussing here coming in the next 5, 10, 15 years?
I don't see us going back on the 17th Amendment. It's just too baked in. The expectation that you vote directly for your senators is just too much of a given. And it's for that reason that the broad expectation in this country that you, when you elect someone, you're voting directly to elect that person and not electing them through some sort of mediating institution. That's the reason why I imagine the Electoral College will eventually go away, especially if we continue to get elections in which presidents are selected through these constitutional means and not by a majority of people actually voting for them. If the frequency of that increases over the next 10 years, and I expect calls for abolishing the Electoral College to increase, or if this November or in 4 years, if Democrats win Texas, then the Electoral College will go away immediately. I mean, it's really that straightforward. Republicans will
fair enough.
In that situation, the Republican Party will no longer be able to win presidential elections, and they'll quickly devise a set of principles for why you got to get rid of the Electoral College, which I would welcome.
Yeah, I think that the big challenge is that getting enough people on the same page for any sort of amendment to the Constitution just seems so impossible at the moment because it requires supermajorities in the Senate and then 3/4 of the states have to ratify it. It's really hard to imagine this happening, but it's kind of nice to revisit this period in the 19-teens when actually, there was a lot of support for a lot of different constitutional amendments, and that idea of amending the Constitution and finding that kind of consensus, it could be possible again in the future. It's kind of a nice dream to keep alive.
Well, I mean, I think we will be visiting that era, the Gilded Age, the Progressive Era, a lot throughout this series. So, yes, definitely some lessons from there. Okay, Jamel Bowie and Nikki Hammer, thanks for doing this.
Thanks, Jody.
Thank you.
This Day in Esoteric Political History is a proud member of Radiotopia from PRX. You can find lots more about the show, including how to suggest topics, at thisdaypod.com. Now, this is when I ask you to help spread the word about the show. Tell someone, or seriously, leave a rating or review. Those ratings and reviews mean better rankings, and those rankings matter because they increase our visibility, which means more people discover the show. So ratings and reviews really do help. Our researcher and producer is Jacob Feldman. Jamel and Nikki will be back next episode when we discuss one of those events that shook the country to its core, seemed to change everything at once, the assassination of Abraham Lincoln. And there are some things about this that you may not have known. That's next time. My name is Jody Avergan. Thanks again for listening, and we'll see you soon.
Radiotopia.